So, talk is over and I'm sat having a very small glass of wine because I'm driving next to a more substantial glass of wine.
Mine is rather large.
Because you've deserved it. The talk has finished. And you covered so many fascinating topics and opened my eyes to so many new and interesting ideas. Something that's not so new but that I'd like you to explain now is the concept of zero waste.
Yeah. Well, zero waste puts a lot of things together. Most of them are things, as you say, you're familiar with. We're familiar with recycling, with composting and reuse and so on. Everybody's used to the local thrift store and so on, the charity shops. But it's putting them all together and adding something really important, and that is industrial responsibility. When we talked about recycling, the message was the community had to do everything. And quite frankly, the community cannot do everything because industry is making packages and products which can't be reused or recycled or composted. So the zero waste, in my view, requires three things. You need industrial responsibility at the front end of the problem with industrial design, designing things for sustainability. And we need community responsibility at the back end. And we need good political leadership to put these two together. And by this I mean, we are seeing from around the world, from California, from Italy, from Canada and other places, we are seeing that communities can get up to 70% diversion from landfills. Some over 80%. The good political leaders will use this, having captured the high moral ground, to put the pressure on industry. And over and above that, there are a series of simple, practical, cost-effective, and politically acceptable steps which in total accomplish this. And let me spell them out, and I'll particularly emphasize one step, which I'll give the name now. This is the residual separation and research facility, because that is the key linkage between community responsibility and industrial responsibility. But basically, here are the steps. We need source separation. Most communities have that. The second law of thermodynamics says the earlier you get in and separate, or in this case, keep separate, the easier and cheaper it is later on. If you mix everything together, it's a nightmare. So source separation, and then door-to-door collection of just a few simple categories. One container. This is what they do in San Francisco. One container for all the organics, the compostables, one container for all the recyclables that are going to go back to industry, and one container for the residuals. There's no problem with the compostables. They go to a composting facility, many of those in the world. The recyclables go to a materials recovery facility, one or two streams can be done. And then finally, the residuals. Residuals are our mistakes, and the first thing we've got to do is to minimize those. And we can minimize, reduce the amount of residuals we make in several ways. One is waste reduction initiatives. We can ban certain packages, we can tax certain packages, we can put deposits on certain packages, we can avoid certain packages. But we should be thinking of all those things. Secondly, reuse, repair, and deconstruction. Reusing objects is the highest part of the hierarchy, because if you reuse something, you cut out all the extraction costs of raw materials and you cut out the manufacturing costs in terms of energy and global impacts and so on. So reuse. And although reusable objects are only 2% of the total waste stream, they're well over a third of its value. And so this, okay, have a pause.
Yeah. Got to go and answer the door because we're in somebody's house and this is their house. Okay, I've just opened the door for them. Do you remember where you were?
Yeah, we were. So reuse and repair, only 2% of the total discard stream, but over 30% of its value. This is where the jobs are, small businesses. There's some wonderful examples around the world, in Australia, Canada, the United States, in England and so on. Really good examples. Reuse, repair. Link that with job training, taking people off the streets, showing them how to repair these things. Very important for the inner city to create those jobs. And deconstruction. Taking down old buildings in the reverse order, tremendous value in the lumber, in the bricks, in the fitments, the doors, the windows, as all the other things like pipes and everything else. Huge amount of money to be made and saved there, and jobs jobs doing it. And then there are the spin-off industries. If you're recovering the good lumber, then you can use the lumber to make either flooring, furniture, and so on. There's another business. And someone's got to sell this, market it, more businesses. Mm-hmm. So all kinds of jobs. So somebody said this, I thought it was very good. An incinerator is one big black box. But the zero waste strategy is hundreds of little green boxes as far as the economy is concerned. Jobs, small businesses. Third thing that we can do to reduce waste is an economic incentive. And there are several, but this is the one that I like. It's called the pay-by-bag system. The whole waste handling comes out of the taxes. Most people don't even notice how much money is being paid in your local rates, but you're paying for it. But there's an elegant way of getting people to pay according to how much they make. So in this system, if you've got one container for compostables, that's free, or rather no surcharge. Recyclables, free, no surcharge. But the residuals, the more you make, the more you pay. You have the pay-by-bag system. The way it worked in our town is every time that we put out a plastic bag of trash, we had to put a coupon on it, which cost us $1.50. Mm. And it really makes you very conscious of what you buy, and making sure that you get recyclable and you compost in your backyard and things like that. And in fact, that strategy alone in some communities has reduced the waste stream by 25%.
They talked about implementing that here with they started putting cameras in people's bins and going around.
I don't think it wants to be too police state type thing.
Well, without the infrastructure being in place, it's a little bit difficult to expect people to pay.
There's a better way to do it, and that's a positive way, and that is to have somebody who inspects the trash in one household each week, and if they've done everything right, they win $1,000. That gets people's attention. And after, if the first week someone doesn't win, next week someone wins $2,000, $3,000, $4,000. It's amazing. You think that's a lot of money? That's $50,000 a year. That's more than consultants usually charge to go to the toilet. It's not a large amount of money, but you don't even need $1,000. Tickets to a test match or a cup final probably work just as well. So now we're down to the residual fraction that we haven't been able to reduce. And typically that either goes straight into a landfill or, heaven forbid, into an incinerator. And in my proposal, what it does, it goes into a residual separation and research facility which is built in front of the landfill. Nothing into the landfill which hasn't been screened. Mm-hmm. And nothing which doesn't go into the landfill which can't be visited by the local citizens to see what's going into the landfill. Mm. The stuff goes onto conveyor belts, paid workers, well-protected workers pull out more recyclables, more toxics, and the dirty organic fraction makes its way to the end of the conveyor belts, not touched, shredded, goes through a second composting operation, not to make a product to sell because it's contaminated, but to stabilize it biologically above ground before it causes problems underground. Underground, it causes leachate, smell, methane. We can cut down that greatly by this step of stabilizing, at least for the interim. Now, that research, the residual separation facilities are already in operation in Nova Scotia, and they like them because it's made the landfills much less smelly and much more attractive politically. But I want that one stage there. I want the research center. I want to involve a local university, local technical college, the professors and students who are interested in sustainability, interested in industrial design. There are all kinds of things which we can tap into. And basically, they will study these residuals. And there's many things that they can do. They can see if everything's being captured right, and if it isn't, you need better education. They can see if there's local uses for some materials outside the market. They can also recommend to businesses things like dispensing systems. Instead of keep on selling the same bin of plastic bottles all the time with shampoo, detergents, you have dispensing systems which allow people to refill the same bottle again and again. Mm. I mean, little creativity at the front end saves millions at the back end. Then, so this research center, the most important thing is that they would take on the task. Imagine a professor saying this to a student, right, for your master's degree, this object keeps coming into this facility, these objects or this package. We want you to design an object or a package to serve the same function, but it won't end up here because people can either reuse it or so on. And so the message to industry, and this is where community responsibility meets industrial responsibility, because we say to them, industry, if we can't reuse it, if we can't recycle it, if we can't compost it, then you guys shouldn't be making it. The message is fundamental. We need better industrial design for the 21st century. If we're going to make it to the end of the 21st century, we need better industrial design for sustainability. In fact, we will not get to a sustainable society without better industrial design. And the good news here is that some companies are ahead of the game. They're ahead of communities. In some cases, we're pushing on an open door. In Canada, for example, the beer industry for over 50 years has been using reusable glass bottles. Each bottle goes around 18 times. 98% are being recovered. It's cheaper for the industry. It's created 2,000 jobs, no cost to the municipality whatsoever. So there's zero waste. It's been going on for over 50 years.
And my milk is delivered in a bottle to my
there
door.
There we go. And it's been going on for over 50 years in England with milk bottles. And in the United States, they persuaded us it was more convenient to go and line up in a supermarket, buy your milk in bloody gallon jug, take the gallon jug back with you, have to haul it back, and then when it's finished, you've got a plastic jug to get rid of. No, I mean, delivering it to your door is definitely the ideal thing. And, okay, so you're putting the pressure on industry, industrial responsibility at the front end, and you've got this combination. We're all in this together. And the thing which makes zero waste exciting for me is it's the stepping stone to sustainability. And it's the best stepping. I'm not saying that zero waste equals sustainability. I'm saying it's the beginning of sustainability. And it's the ideal place to start because everybody makes waste. And all the time we're making waste, we're part of living non-sustainably on a finite planet. But every time we get this good leadership, which allows us to recover the resources in our discarded materials, then we become part of moving towards sustainability. That's the first part. What we need now is an institute, which may be local, regional, national, international even, Institute for Zero Waste and Sustainability, which not only pulls all the ideas for better industrial design, but also links with other aspects of sustainability, which may be not quite as close to people. For instance, we can link to sustainable agriculture through composting. We can link education with the research center. We can link with sustainable architecture with deconstruction of buildings. If you see how buildings came down, and you're going to build them differently when you know that the environment's important. And then sustainable economy. You got all those hundreds of green boxes, all the different businesses that mom and pop, big corporations and so on. And here's a message. We want to take the profit out of waste. We don't want people making profit out of waste. If you're going to run a landfill, let the community run the landfill. If you have an incinerator, heaven help us, let the community run the incinerator. If you want to make profit, you make profit out of resources. So you want to make profit in this business, you know, the biffers of the world, then get into composting, get into recycling, get into reuse and repair and deconstruction. Make as much money as you want. But don't make money out of waste, because all the time people are making profit out of waste, we're going to keep making that waste.
Thank you very much, Professor.
Thank you.